You're listening to the Texas Standard. I'm Lauren Silverman with KERA North Texas, in for host David Brown. Now to big news for elections in Texas. According to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the state's strict voter ID law violates the Voting Rights Act by making it harder for minorities to vote. At the heart of the legal battle is a lawsuit filed by Fort Worth Democrats, including U.S. Representative Mark Vesey.
I am really happy about this. One of the reasons why, you know, I became the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit was because I wanted to make sure that voting was continued to stay easy in Texas. I think that the Republicans' efforts to try and make voting hard and try to make it difficult and try to make it burdensome on the poor, on minorities, on people that have been disenfranchised in the past was bad. And I think that this ruling is going to give us an opportunity to make a lot of that right.
So what's the ruling mean for November's elections? Rick Hassan, professor of law and political science at the University of California at Irvine, is with us to help sort it out. Professor Hassan, were you surprised by the ruling yesterday?
Well, it's a surprise given that the entire Fifth Circuit decided to take the case, if only to affirm what the lower court did. It's somewhat of a surprise that it came out the way it did.
So the ruling didn't actually strike down the law, though, as a whole, right?
That's right. What the court said, as the earlier panel had said before that was put on hold, is that when there's a violation of the Voting Rights Act because a law has a discriminatory effect, it's the court's job to preserve as much of the law as possible while still fixing the problem of discrimination. And so that's what the lower court has been directed to do in this case, to come up with some fix like an affidavit or some way for people who lack the right kind of ID to still be able to cast a ballot.
Now, there were options for people to have 7 different types of IDs, and yet Texas's law was still considered the strictest, I think, in the country. How many more options would there need to be to make it not a sort of undue burden?
Well, it depends on what you need to show, right? So if all you need to show is a utility bill, well, that people have pretty easy access to that. But if you don't drive, if you live in a rural area and you can't get to a motor vehicle bureau or something like that, you don't have a passport because passports are expensive. The district court said there were about 600,000 people that fell into this category that didn't have one of those 7 kinds of IDs. And so even though you might have some forms of ID, they might not be the right kind. Like you might have a student ID, and that wouldn't be good enough. And so there's supposed to be some workaround now that's going to be put in place in time for the November elections, with possible further changes to come down the line after that.
So an interesting alternative I saw out of Wisconsin caught my eye earlier this week. It reminded me of the sort of sick notes my mom used to write when I had to miss schools. The Wisconsin court said that they would allow voters to have something who couldn't get a photo ID to cast ballots, to have something called an affidavit option. Explain how that works.
Sure. And what they're building on there is the kind of softening of the law that we've seen in South Carolina and North Carolina. And it's more than just a teacher's note. You'd be signing something under penalty of perjury, saying that you don't have any of these IDs and that you'd face an impediment in getting one. And if you did that and you swore who you were, then you'd be able to vote. And of course, you've sworn something under penalty of perjury. So if you turn out to be trying to commit voter fraud, there you go. You've got this piece of paper right there where you've just lied on a government form. So it would be pretty serious to do something like that.
Do we actually know, and this has been the crux of the debate, I guess, how often voter fraud in Texas is happening?
Well, the court did address that. What they said is that we know that mail-in ballot fraud occurs with absentee ballots, but the voter ID law doesn't really address that. It really only deals with people committing fraud in person. And what the court said there was that there were only 2 cases that people knew of where someone tried to impersonate someone else at the polls, where a voter ID law would make a difference out of millions and millions of votes cast. So it seems like the type of fraud that the voter ID law is targeted at doesn't really occur much at all.
Okay, so the bottom line, though, for November's election, do we know what you'll need to put in your wallet or what type of identification is enough?
Well, for most Texans who have one of these 7 forms of ID, you have to bring that, and you still need that to vote. It's for people who lack that. We don't know exactly what the procedure is going to be. That's going to be now hashed out in front of the trial court again before the November election. And then there'll be further proceedings after that to come up with a more permanent rule.
But how long could that take?
Well, the idea for this election is for something to be done within a matter of weeks. And there's still the chance that the state of Texas decides to go to the Supreme Court to get this reversed. The longer term solution, we could be looking at another year or two before all of that gets hashed out. And further on down the line, and more interestingly, is that the appeals court left open a path for the district court to find that Texas engaged in intentional racial discrimination. And if that happens, it's possible that Texas will be put back under federal oversight of its voting rules for up to 10 years. So that's kind of the hidden big message in yesterday's opinion.
Rick Hassan is professor of law and political science at the University of California at Irvine. Thanks so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure.